I'm David Schreiner Kahn, and this is Smashing the Plateau. No matter how successful you are, there's probably at least one area where roadblocks are keeping you from fully achieving your goals. Fortunately, you've come to the right place. Every expert I talk to on this podcast is different, but they all have one thing in common. They know how to fix problems that keep people stuck. We're continuing with our mini-series, Fire Your Business Coach. We're talking about how so many professionals today seem to be floundering, why they're looking for answers in all the wrong places, and we offer some tips about what they should be doing instead. This week, we're looking at what it takes to create a whole new level of success and profitability, and why some coaches just can't take you there. Today, I'm pleased to welcome Tony Rose back to Smashing the Plateau. Tony is a founding partner of Rose, Snyder, and Jacobs, a partnership of certified public accountants. For more than 35 years, his firm has provided a full range of assurance, tax, and consulting services for small, public, closely held, and family-owned businesses with a specialty in high-net-worth individuals and their families. Tony is a visionary who is passionate about helping people attain their business and personal goals. He's a legacy wealth coach and a certified Kolbe Method consultant, as well as the author of Say Hello to the Elephants and Five Eyes on the Fence. Tony, welcome back to Smashing the Plateau.
Good morning, David.
So, Tony, you're a very accomplished professional, and I know that you've spent a lot of time observing, studying, and teaching what it takes to create a financially solvent business. We were just chatting a little bit before starting to record this episode about how the world has changed a lot, particularly in the last decade or two. Now, one of the things I've observed is that it seems to be easier than ever to start a business, and there may be more and more people who are starting businesses. And also, the internet and globalization have created great opportunities, but also unprecedented competition. We're no longer just in competition with people in our neighborhood. We're in competition with somebody else, anywhere else in the world, for almost anything other than maybe a face-to-face experience. And for professional service businesses in particular, I think it poses some both some interesting opportunities, but also some real challenges. And in your experience, I wondered if we could start off by talking about what you see as what it takes for a professional services business to be financially solvent today.
That's a pretty broad question. Frankly, being financially solvent in a service business can be very easy. The first thing is to understand that you're a business. A business has to run based upon the constraints of its cash flow. I know when I started my business the first year, I took out $500. It was a little tough to live, but we never missed a payroll. We always paid all of our bills, and we established a history with the people that took care of us that we always paid them. That's really, really important. No person that's servicing you or selling you a product necessarily needs to understand that you're getting started. So you have to be financially responsible. That means spending within your means. That means not spending money that you don't have. And it means stepping out in faith some and taking a risk and thinking big at the same time. Especially today, with social media being so important, having the cloud, having the proper tools with which to communicate with people, there is some kind of investment involved in making sure you have all that stuff available to you. And I think it's important that you make a commitment to the kinds of things like you're doing, David, with these podcasts in order to communicate your wisdom to a broader spectrum of people, so that they can be exposed to what you have to offer, again, in a broad sense, and then they can seek you out as a service professional to get some kind of specific advice for what's going on with their specific lives.
So let's say you're in business as a professional service provider, and you're at it for a while, and you do exactly what you just described, where you are very careful about managing your cash flow. You create a great team, whether it's however your business is configured. You have a team that is part of whatever it is you offer to your clients or customers, and things are moving along. And in particular, in today's world with social media, do also as you describe, which is create some method to impart your wisdom to your audience, so that you start to have a following, people get to know you, like you, trust you, and you gain some steady customers. One of the things that we've focused on in Smashing the Plateau is, for an existing business, what does it take to get past a plateau when you've had some success, right? And many businesses, you know, growth is not a linear process. So many businesses will start out of the gate, they'll hum along in some fashion for a number of years, and then the business owner or owners want to take it to the next level, and often it's really challenging to do that. And I'm wondering what you might have to say about what it takes to really thrive at that sort of that second bump up.
That's an interesting question, because I've lived that, and I think maybe to some extent my practice is living that now. Early on in our careers, we made an okay living, and we're having fun and doing what we wanted to do, and it was just fine. It was just fine. We knew that we weren't the most successful, but we thought we were okay. I realized that I was becoming increasingly dissatisfied with where we were at our level of CPA firm. And we actually ended up engaging a behaviorist a long, long time ago, and we were paying quite a substantial portion of our revenue to that behaviorist to help us get bigger, to smash up through that plateau. Really, what the big discovery for me was is that we were bounded by ourselves, that we stop ourselves because of a small focus sometimes, because of fear of the unknown, because of fear of failure, and that we fail to grow and learn because we get too comfortable in the niche that we're in. For various reasons, this behaviorist who I talked about on the first time that we spoke together on Smashing the Plateau, his name is Dr. Brad Spencer, helped me get to a new level of myself, which then helped us be open to new levels, and that actually happened here. And we kind of accelerated, became a much more substantial accounting firm with much more interesting, much more sophisticated clients, and now we are at a new level with 50 people here. The prime thing is to understand that oftentimes you stop yourself and you're incapable of independently being able to move yourself from one place to another place. And the role of a great coach, business coach, is helping you to see that mirror, to hold that mirror up to your face and help you understand that you could be different than you are. And that's what I think, that's the secret sauce that makes some coaches more effective than others.
Did you also talk with, as part of that process, did you also look at ways to bring revenue into the firm that were not trading time for dollars, which is so common with professional service businesses?
We have over the years attempted to do that, and I don't think we've done that very well. It is... For accountants in particular, there's a couple reasons. We're brought up in the time trading time for dollars world, so that's what we know. Number two, we almost always believe it takes less time to get things done than it actually does, so that when we value something, we value it way under what it probably really costs to make a reasonable profit at it, and also what the client, the consumer of that service, values that service at. In fact, I recall reading, and I can't be specific right now, some studies that when surveyors went to clients to find out how much they'd be willing to pay for the services of someone like me, for the value that those clients were getting, they oftentimes said 50% more, some quantity more than what they were being billed by their accountants. Now, that sounds kind of strange, but I think we tend to undervalue ourselves. We haven't done a very good job. An interesting thing is that I hear that service providers that bill flat fees often would like to be able to get paid by the hour, and service providers that get paid by the hour oftentimes would like to figure out how to go flat fees. So I'm not sure what the best way to do it is. I think there's some kinds of services that are amenable. For example, creating a strategic plan in a business might be more amenable to a flat fee than participating in an IRS, helping someone with an IRS audit. It kind of depends on what the service is.
Right, right. Going back to the issue of coaches for a minute, what would you say are some of the qualities that make someone a really great coach?
I am very, very interested in what makes up the aspects of people's human capital. I write about that in my second book, Five Eyes on the Fence. And one of the things I talk about that makes a person is the array of their intelligences, that the Howard Gardner concept that people are more intelligent than just book learning, than math and linguistic or scientific knowledge. One of those characteristics is having interpersonal intelligence, understanding the relationships between people and being, in fact, I was talking to my daughter about this weekend, about the tendency for those kinds of people to be somewhat empathic, to understand, put themselves in the place of the person that they're delivering value to. And so I think someone that is empathic, I think someone that really loves their clients, really cares for them. One of my clients in Boston says they want a professional working for them that gives them hugs. And someone that is willing to speak the truth to that client about what they see that client is reflecting in their behavior and the kinds of decisions they make. So truthful love, passionate concern, those are what I would look for out of a coach. And I've been very lucky over the years. I've had a number of coaches and been in a number of coaching programs. And I think for the most part, I found it.
Well, that's great to hear. One of the things that I see is with the rise of professionals working for themselves, whether it's as freelancers or as part of small organizations, that there seems to be an increase in the number of people who call themselves coaches. Right. And, you know, we were talking before the show, also before the recording, about what kinds of criteria there are for people to become coaches or to call themselves coaches. And, you know, with different kinds of professions, there are different kinds of either gatekeepers or criteria that will allow the individuals to have a certain kind of title, right? So to become a certified public accountant, there are certain requirements you have to meet. To become a heart surgeon, there are certain kinds of requirements you have to meet. To become a coach, there are all kinds of coaches, and there are all kinds of ways you can call yourself a coach. And I want to tie that in, actually, to what we're talking about with professional service businesses trying to be financially solvent, trying to thrive. So there's been, particularly with e-commerce, there's been a move for people who coach others on how to turn your service into information products or how to make money while you sleep. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are about what you've observed in that arena.
I agree with you. There's many people that hang out a shingle and say, I'm a coach. And that doesn't make them a coach. A coach is someone that is constantly learning. And when someone is a business coach, whether they're giving specific business advice, I'll call it tactical advice on how to get more business, how to do social media, how to market yourself, that kind of stuff, more tactical, or whether you're talking about strategic advice, meaning philosophically, why are you in business? Who are you servicing? Why are you doing it? And what's your ethos in providing services? I think that those coaches that seek to get professional training and understand how to do it better and I know that there's coach organizations where you can there's a rigorous training and where you can become certified to be a certified coach. Those people tend to be much more knowledgeable and have invested much more time and introspection in how to deliver those services. That's not to say that someone who absolutely has done none of that will be totally non-impactful to a business. But I would, if it was me, I would rather go with someone that's been spending time learning how to do this stuff properly, or who has had so many years that the mistakes that they've made have been on other people, than someone who just says, I'm a coach because I've had a job in a certain industry and I know how to do this. Translating what was successful for you at a certain position does not necessarily mean that you can translate that for other people with other personality types, other instinctive drives, and other kinds of characteristics that are not you. So how do you find those people? Well, I think you ask people, you look for recommendations, you can read the writings of those people on social media, or podcasts, listen to podcasts, and feel if what they have to say, the messages they have to say, resonate with you internally. And most importantly, when I think someone hires a coach, and they've given it a little bit of time, they should know whether it's resonating with them or they're feeling good about it. I think a coach that makes you feel bad or stupid is probably not the right coach for you. You may not know a lot of stuff and you may be doing bad stuff. And believe me, around here, we do all kinds of bad stuff. We let money roll off the table all the time, and we're accountants. But someone should not make you feel guilty. They should help you be more understanding of your behavior and help you empower yourself to do better.
Tony, what do you think are some of the real motivations of the coaches who are shouting the loudest in the marketplace?
Well, it depends whether they're shouting about a thing and they are trying to preach their gospel, or whether they're shouting about themselves as individuals and it's self-aggrandizement. Is that the correct term,
Dave? Yeah.
Whether it's self-promoting. People that are really self-promoting, I tend to shy away from. If someone is yelling at me, wake up and look at yourself and be better, and these are the kinds of things that you can do to be better, I think that I tend to listen to that more.
That's a very astute observation. How can a community help a professional, particularly somebody who's a professional service business owner, be more successful?
Well, I've been in two specific communities where, actually, many more. My work with the Legacy Network, which was a very wonderful group of financial service professionals that meet in community two or three times a year. My being a Colby consultant and meeting with the Colby consultant community once a year, me being in strategic coach where I meet with the other people who are clients of Dan Sullivan's four times a year. Those are very, very valuable places to share insights about the common body of knowledge that you're learning together. And those communities actually end up becoming equally rich experientially as having the contact with the coach that might be the facilitator. Also, I had for 5 or 6 years been a member of Vistage. And again, I thought that very, very rich while it was happening for me. The mutuality of experience and the sharing of that experience with one another becomes a real safety net for people. And those communities, you can really make friends where you can pick up the phone and saying, I'm having a problem. And they understand the tools that were given to you by the coaches. And you can talk about how to employ those tools properly.
Is there a story you might be willing to share of something that happened in one of those communities that was really transformational?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. My very first book is because of that community at the Legacy Network. The Legacy Network was founded by a man whose name was Scott Fithian. Scott Fithian was a tremendous financial service visionary and believed that the clients of financial service professionals were not necessarily being helped by those financial service professionals in as impactful a way to help make decisions and decide what they want to do so that those financial service professionals can supply the products to help them do it. He created the Legacy Network to be a consortium of financial service professionals. We were the first accounting firm, I believe, to even participate in it. And it was during a time when accounting firms were getting in the financial service industry, although we don't sell any financial service products here. He had this thing that I called quadrant planning. It was a planning methodology, a four-step process for helping to understand what it is you wanted to get done, deciding what you want to do to help it get done, then getting it done, and then managing to see whether what got done was what you wanted to get done, four-step process, which I called quadrant planning, and that turned into my first book. That became a communication model here in how we're theoretically supposed to be helping our clients, and it became a differentiator for us when we were talking to clients about why would you want to have your tax return or your financial statement prepared by our firm. We used it as a differentiator, and it did make things more effective and efficient. And so it all came from being in that community and talking in that community about how these four quadrants interplay and how you work your way through the quadrants. And there's more and more understanding every year. Unfortunately, Scott Fithian passed away, and the successor to Scott is a man by the name of Todd Fithian, who's done a very, very good job with that firm and even grown that firm even larger and better. But that really impacted my life, really, really changed my life.
Well, it's a great story. I wondered if you could actually use that example and talk about what has happened since then and kind of where your work is now and how it ties into some of the themes we've talked about.
With regard to accounting firms, we found that there were three problems with accounting firms that needed to be fixed, or we needed to differentiate ourselves in the marketplace. One was that accountants were always late, not timely in delivering their work. Two was that the work always tended to be more expensive. I call it scope creep. You thought you were ordering one thing and then you got it, and then it was billed 25 or 30 or 40 or 50% more. And then the final thing is the disruption of getting the work done. You end up feeling like you're working for your accountant, not for us, or not for yourself, because you're having to supply so much information. The employment of the quadrants created a communication model with our clients so that they knew where they were every time. If we were going to be late on something, they knew why we were going to be late immediately, and you could recontract. If it was going to be more expensive, they knew why it was going to be more expensive, because there was other challenges. The employment of that and the additional understanding over the years of how to use the quadrants has actually helped us be more profitable. So that's really, really important. I think the second thing that I've learned from coaches is that continuous learning is the requirement for continuous growth. The minute you stop learning new things is really the minute you stop growing. And I'm sure you've had guests that talk about sharks in the water and all that kind of stuff. Constant movement is important, or you sink. And I think that's really true. And the people that you have in your network that you meet through these coaching experiences, especially when you have a coaching community, are people that one can create points of contact for you to meet other people that can be impactful. In fact, me meeting you was through someone that I met actually through a community, Jennifer Cushell. And I valued my being able to know you. That was a very unexpected result of my initial relationship with Jennifer. So that's kind of what I've learned through coaching. A good coach stirs the pot in positive ways, makes you different than what you are, and helps you continue to create growth.
That's very profound. Tony, where's your business now?
Where's my business now?
Yeah, where's your business now? What are you working on?
Well,
what's new and exciting?
What's new and exciting? Well, it's really bad stuff. Part of we get fueled by fear. The complications in people's lives is grist for our mill. There's three things that we really love doing. One is very positive, which is working with businesses and families to understand where it is they really want to get and help wrap the accounting and tax planning around those goals. We love to do it in a multidisciplinary way. So we would never be a life coach. We wouldn't do it the same way you do it, David. We would want to have a seat at the table and be part of the planning team. The second thing that's very, very important, especially for service businesses, is that when you are delivering services to clients that are not in your state, the states have become very aggressive in trying to collect taxes. So, for example, if I had hired you and I was paying you sitting here in California, the state of California would be expecting you to file a California tax return. The states are being much more aggressive in collecting state taxes, and that's become a really, really hot area, especially in service businesses. The third thing is disputes with the different governmental agencies, including the federal government. People sometimes are unable to collect their taxes, and we have spent a lot of time working on how do you deal with the government? How do you keep them? How do you permit yourself to have an orderly payment of your back taxes without them coming in and seizing your property or disrupting you or levying your wages? And that has become a very hot area. So those are the kinds of three things we're working on. We're always working on, oh, there's a fourth thing, the whole issue of crowdfunding. Emerging companies and the use of crowdfunding nowadays is requiring accountants to help small burgeoning companies with financial statements get what they call reviewed financial statements and state and certified audits. And that's become another hot area for us.
That's great. And I would imagine that, particularly in the last area with crowdfunding, that's new and emerging, probably new and emerging schools of thought on what has to happen.
Well, and there are some, and I believe there's some requirements. It's a very interesting thing. The companies that are seeking to do to have crowdfunding and are successful, there's a company I just saw published, a car company, automobile company called Elios, I think, Elios, that just raised $17 million. And I think there was over 6,000 investors in that crowdfunding. Those are really incredible success stories, but they had a real story to tell, and I think they were kicking around for a long time and had help from a lot of coaches on how to do it correctly. So the use of coaches by these emerging companies, even though it feels expensive, might actually be the most economical thing, because it's very hard for these people to do this stuff alone without support.
It sure is. So speaking of support, how can people get in touch with you, Tony? How can they learn more about what you do and your firm?
Well, we invite everyone to come onto our website, rsjcpa.com. That's rsjcpa.com. And click on the Thought Center, and you'll see blogs and articles and things of interest that could be interesting. I also have a blog on Blogspot called What We Should Be Doing. So it's whatweshouldbedoing.blogspot.com. Those are my personal thoughts of many, many different topics as they come up. And I'm always happy to answer any questions that might come up in someone's mind if what they read that I have to say is evocative and they'd like to have more information.
Great. Well, Tony, this has been a really fascinating discussion. I feel like we've really taken what we discussed the first time you were on Smashing the Plateau and taken it to a whole new level. So thank you for coming back.
Thanks, David.
My guest today has been Tony Rose, CPA, consultant, author, and speaker. Thank you again, Tony, for joining us.
A pleasure.
Thank you for listening to Smashing the Plateau, the podcast produced by Tend Strategic Partners. Let's continue the discussion. So connect with me on LinkedIn and Twitter. Please share this episode with your colleagues and friends, and it would also help a great deal if you would write a review on iTunes so that new people can find us. Come back and listen next week as we explore how to find the right community to support your success. My guest, social media influencer Ted Koyne, comes back for a second time on Smashing the Plateau to share tips on how being part of the right community influences a number of elements that are part of our success trajectory. It's an episode you won't want to miss. I hope you've enjoyed what you've learned. I know your time is precious, and I want to thank you for spending some of it with us today.